A couple of announcements real quick. Women's retreat coming up this weekend, studying the women that are in the lineage of Jesus, in that genealogical record, some fantastic stories in there. So that's this weekend. My wife will be standing over kind of by the sign-up sheet there. You can talk to her. She's going to twist your arm if you haven't signed up yet. So if you have questions or whatever, you can see her too after the service. So also, I wanted to announce, we made a mention of this last week, but I want to remind all of you, we've been going through the Experiencing God study as a church, and many of us are in small groups studying that together. Next week, we will not be doing Experiencing God, and the week after, so Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, we will be taking a break from Experiencing God, but your groups should decide what they want to do. Our group met last week and decided they're going to just get together and hang out. So we're going to do that this coming, the next Wednesday. And we haven't come up with a plan for Easter week yet, but I'm sure we'll be doing something. So, but you want to talk about it with your groups because we'll be off the study for those 2 weeks. Okay? All right. Today, we are on the seventh week of our study of Experiencing God. And this week, our theme verse, our memory verse this week is Hebrews 11:6. Hebrews 11:6 says, "Without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him." So that's kind of the main theme we'll be looking at for this week. We've been talking about different realities of what it means to experience God. And in the book, the authors talk about the seven realities of experiencing God. Today, we've gone through 1 through 4, and we're going to be on number 5. But just as a way of review, the seven realities we've looked at so far is that God is always at work around you. Secondly, that God pursues a continuing love relationship with you that is real and personal. And thirdly, God invites you to become involved with him in his work. He wants to use ordinary people to accomplish his work in the world. So he invites you to become involved with him in his work. Number 4, God speaks by the Holy Spirit through the Bible and prayer, circumstances in the church, to reveal himself, his purposes, and his ways. So we've just left off with that last week. We spent 2 weeks talking about how God speaks to us. And then today we're going to be focusing, and throughout this week we'll be focusing on this number 5. God's invitation for you to work with him always leads you to a crisis of belief that requires faith and action. And here is where many people hit the road and walk away, right here. There are lots of people who followed Jesus, crowds and crowds and crowds of people hung out with Jesus as long as Jesus was doing stuff they liked. Free food, I'm there. You heal me, I'm there. You start asking something from me, see ya. It's getting really uncomfortable, and Jesus has a way of doing that, bringing us outside of ourselves. So God's invitation for you to work with him always leads you to a crisis of belief that requires faith and action. So one of the things that helped me as we're studying this, one of the things that helped me was to understand the difference between a calamity and a crisis. Because when I hear the word crisis, I think completely out of control, panic mode. Oh no, what do I do? Scrambling, the world's coming to an end. The sky is falling. But the word crisis here does not mean a calamity. The word literally means, when the word crisis is used, it comes from a word that means to make a decision or a judgment. It's the moment in the courtroom when the judge finally declares guilty or innocent or whatever the judgment would be, and he pounds the gavel down. Crisis, meaning a judgment or a decision has been made. When you follow God, you will over and over and over and over and over again come to a point where you need to make a decision. You need to make a judgment. It's like coming to the fork in the road and having to either go your way or to go God's way. And I love what Yogi Berra says. Some of you have no idea who Yogi Berra is. Google it. Yogi Berra, classic baseball commentary guy who had these crazy way with words. He said some amazing things. Just look up Yogi Berra quote sometime in your free time and you'll be laughing yourself silly. But he has a wonderful quote. Yogi Berra, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. Think about that for a little bit. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Well, God brings you to a fork in the road over and over again. It's really a choice between, am I going to go with God or am I going to look for a different way to go? And what that really boils down to is, am I going to go with God or am I going to go my own way? Now, here's a quote from the book that you'll be reading this week. And listen to what it says. This unit focuses on a major turning point in following God. When God invites you to join him in his work, he has a God-sized assignment for you. You will quickly realize you cannot do what he's asking you to do on your own. If God doesn't help you, you will fail. This is the crisis of belief when you must decide whether to believe God for what he wants to do through you. And at this point, many people decide not to follow him. And then they wonder why they're not experiencing God the way other people do. God's presence, God's activity in their life. Why am I not experiencing God like other people talk about experiencing God? Well, a lot of times it's because we've chosen to do our own thing rather than the hard thing. The thing that would require us to die to ourselves and follow Jesus. So there's a couple of biblical examples I just wanted to think through this morning. The first one, we looked at several months ago in our studies together when we were going through the book of Daniel. And in the book of Daniel chapter 3, there's an example of three guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're three Jewish young men who get taken from their home as captives in a war. And they get taken to the land of Babylon, the land of their enemies. And while they're there, King Nebuchadnezzar, who is now ruling over the entire known world back then, King Nebuchadnezzar comes up with a law that says everybody has to bow down to him and no other god for a certain amount of time. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are Jewish young men, are put in a place of crisis. In fact, every Jew was put in a place of crisis. We just happen to know the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego because it was written down in the scripture. But every one of them had a decision to make. Would they do what God wanted them to do, which was to obey him and him alone, or would they bow down and worship a statue in the honor of King Nebuchadnezzar? And the dilemma for these Jewish young men is they understood, because of their current crisis. By crisis, I'm not talking about judgment, I'm talking about panic mode. Because of their current panic mode, what they had just been through as a nation was the result of them not wanting to follow God corporately as a nation. And God warned them, and he warned them, and he warned them. Sent them prophet after prophet after prophet. For hundreds of years, warning them, quit following these idols and worshiping them and worship me and me alone. If you don't, I'm going to send an enemy and they are going to rout you in war and they're going to carry you off as captives. And they just stiffened their neck. You know what I'm talking about? You've got a horse that just doesn't want to turn and you're pulling that rein and it just cranks its neck the other way. We can do that with God. And that's exactly what the people of Israel did. God said, go over here. And they're like, I ain't going that way. And they were fighting God the whole way. And God kept in his patience. He kept warning them, listen, here's what's going to happen if you don't. And they didn't listen. And they get hauled off to Babylon. Now, while they're in Babylon, they're told, either worship this statue or worship or go into the fiery furnace. And they understood the lesson from their history. I could worship this statue, but the consequences of worshiping a false god are much higher than the consequences of me choosing to worship God, even if you throw me in the fiery furnace. And so when the trumpets play and the harps play and all the musicians play, there's music and everybody's bowing down to this statue, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to bow down. Well, King Nebuchadnezzar's furious, right? And he calls the boys in. Hey, come here and explain yourself. Listen, I'm going to try this again. You either bow down to my statue or I'm throwing you in the furnace. And their response to King Nebuchadnezzar is in Daniel chapter 3, verse 17. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty, In other words, we're not bowing down to your statue. Go ahead and throw us in the furnace. We're trusting God for something that is impossible on our own. We're trusting God for this thing, and we will refuse to disobey him and follow you, O king. And you know the rest of the story, right? They get thrown in the furnace, and God shows up in the furnace with them. And it's in the furnace when their bonds that were holding their arms together were freed. And they're running around in the fire. And the king and the other people look in and they go, there's four people. Didn't you throw three in? There's four in there now. Right? Then they come out, the three. We don't know what happened to the fourth figure. Disappears in the story. But the three come out. Their hair's not singed. Their clothes don't even smell like smoke. And they give testimony what God had done in their life. Now, if you're put in a similar situation where you need to choose to follow the world's ways or to follow God, which do you choose? Oh, come on. We already know which way we've all chosen, right? Have you learned the lesson, though? Have you learned the lesson? Because what God's trying to do is get us to walk by faith, that we trust him. We trust him in those no-win situations that he will bring us through, no matter what. We trust him. That's a person of faith. This is what God's after in our life. He brings us to a fork in the road, and he wants us to choose, go with God every time, no matter the consequences. Go with God every single time. Well, there's another example in the scripture. It's not a great example. It's a negative example, how not to do it, right? In Genesis, we read about the calling of Abraham. God calls Abraham and says, I've disinherited all these other nations, but I am going to create a nation for myself that will be my inheritance. I'm going to create a nation, and I'm going to use you, Abraham, to do it. So God calls Abraham. Abraham's an old man. And he says to Abraham, you and your wife are going to have children. Look at the stars in the sky. You're going to have more children than you could possibly count, like the stars in the sky. That will be your children, more than you can count. And the scripture says that Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. So we're left to think he's ready to go. He's trusting God for this whole thing. But then as the story goes on, Sarah, Abram's wife, is kind of doubting, like, I don't know if this is ever going to happen. She's likely in her 70s. She's an older woman, well past menopause, well past the childbearing years, right? It's an impossible thing. And it kind of dawns on her like, well, maybe God needs help accomplishing his purposes. You ever been there? Want to help God along with his plan? I got an idea, God. Have you thought of this? And so Sarah says to her husband, hey, we've been trying for a while now, and it's just not happening. I think we need to help God out. So here's my servant girl. Go sleep with her. And we'll get your offspring that way. It didn't go so well. In case you didn't know how history has been written, it did not go well. Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 6. Look at what it says. Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him, but she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, the Lord has prevented me from having children. Ooh, that's an interesting statement. The Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her. Abraham agreed with Sarah's proposal, which was a problem. In previous chapters, it said Abram believed God, but in this moment, he didn't really quite believe God. He agreed with her. Okay, that seems to make sense. Be careful of things that make sense if you're trying to follow God. Be careful, because it might make logical sense in a human perspective. It might be way, way off what God's wanting you to do. So, he agreed with her. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian servant and gave her to Abram as a wife. This happened 10 years after Abram had settled in the land of Canaan. So they've been waiting 10 years for a kid, in other words. So Abram had sexual relations with Hagar, the servant girl, and she became pregnant. When Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to treat her mistress Sarai with contempt. So there's conflicts going on between the two girls. Imagine that. There's one thing I never understood when I was in junior high. Never. Something switched in the life of girl culture in junior high for me is what I watched. Well, I thought you were her best friend, but now you're her best friend. You can't be her best friend and her friend. And it's like, oh my goodness, right? So there's this conflict going on between these two women. Jealousy and all this stuff. What did she think was going to happen? Really? I don't know. Anyway, maybe it was just middle school in Iowa Falls, Iowa that was weird like that. But so they were having conflict. Verse 5, when Sarai said to Abram, "This is all your fault." Now there's conflict between them. She's mad at her husband. It's your fault. Is it his fault? If you're a man, the answer is yes, it is. "I put my servant into your arms, but now that she's pregnant, she treats me with contempt. The Lord will show who's wrong, you or me." This guy is in a pickle, right? Abram replied, "Look, she's your servant. Deal with her as you see fit." Then Sarai treated Hagar so harshly, she finally ran away. Listen, Hagar, the servant girl, ends up having a boy. You maybe know this. Maybe you don't. She had a boy named Ishmael. Ishmael was not the one that God had promised. God had promised a child through Sarah, the one who was impossible to get pregnant. She ends up getting pregnant, and when she's told she's going to get pregnant, she laughs, and they name that son Laughter, Isaac. And it's through Isaac that God's blessing comes to the world, the Jewish nation, and Jesus Christ comes into the world through that lineage. What happens to Ishmael and his lineage? They become the enemy of the Jews. And everything you read that's going on in the Middle East, that's been going on in your lifetime in the Middle East, is a consequence of this decision right here. The hatred and the animosity and the jealousy and the fighting and the lobbing rockets back and forth at each other, it all traces back to this decision right here. How much pain has come into the world because of this woman's decision to take matters into her own hands, and Abram, it's his fault too, they took matters into their own hands instead of really trusting God for the impossible thing that God wanted to do through them. They chose their own way. Listen, how much pain has come into your own life because of your own similar decisions? You chose your own way, or you wanted to help God out with his plan, and you interfered and you got in the way, and it's brought pain into your life and the lives of people around you. Because that's what sin does. And what is sin? Not trusting God. Coming to a fork in the road and saying, "I don't know. I think I'm going to go a different direction than where God's going." And it happens over and over again. There's a crisis of belief that God brings us to. A fork in the road, and it's really a choice. Am I going to go with God, or am I going to go my own way? And listen, here's what I've noticed. I don't know when it occurred to me, but I know it occurred to me at least 10 years ago. I'm 56 now, and I was in my 40s when this dawned on me as bright as the morning sun. I have gone through a number of different crises in my life by this definition, forks in the road. That every one of them, I've noticed the circumstances are a little bit different through the decades, but the test is exactly the same as it was when I was a teenager. It's exactly the same. When I was a teenager, I was putting a fork in the road, and the decision was, am I going to try to be cool and popular and win acceptance and get my identity found in what other people thought of me, or would I take the narrow way and do what God wanted me to do? And I made compromises. And I chose to go with the in crowd to try to fit in and be accepted and find my identity in those things. And it brought heartache in my life. I copied the customs of the world instead of doing what I knew God wanted me to do. And I got a girl pregnant. Devastating to me and to many, many friends and family. And right? because I chose to go my way. I didn't trust God. God said, listen, these people over here might give you acceptance for a while, but it's short-lived. If you follow me, you'll find your identity and it'll be secure and you'll never have to fight for it ever again. You'll never struggle to figure it out. You don't have to worry about that. I've got you. You're secure and loved right here, right where you're at. And I chose to look for that acceptance somewhere else. And it cost me. Eventually, I learned that lesson and got back on the right path and got married. But before too long, after we were married, I realized I was in a crisis mode again because I didn't know how to have a relationship with a real live woman. She's different. Men and women are different. And there were many times when God was whispering in my ear, Steve, just die to yourself. It's not that big of a deal. Don't get mad about it. Just let it go. Did I do that? No. No. I thought fighting for my way would be a really great plan. And then I ended up putting my fist through a wall after numerous conflicts in a relationship where I wasn't getting my way. Thankfully, it never led to physical violence with her, but I'm telling you that don't kid yourself. I'm not a saint in the area of relationship stuff. We struggled bad, and I can trace it back to the fork in the road when I decided I didn't want to go with God. He was saying, die to yourself, and I was saying, forget about it. It's about time I got something coming to me. It's my turn to get. I give and give and give. It's time for me to get. Why do I have to always be the one that's wrong? Why can't she be wrong and say she's sorry today? Leads to problems. We work through those things and then we have kids. I'll never forget. 1991, our son was born. And that first night when he was at home, I woke up just in the middle of the night in a panic. Not because he was screaming, he was hungry, but woke up thinking, oh my goodness, there's now a person here that I'm responsible for, and I don't even know if he's breathing. Like, I had to get up and go see, is he still alive or did I kill him? First night. Panic mode. Telling you, it's way, way beyond my ability to control what's going on in my kids' lives. Then they become teenagers and they start making their own decisions by necessity, by God's design. They disagree with you as a parent from time to time, and it causes this, and it's painful at times. And there were many, many moments I really, really struggled. And we got into conflicts. And I look back and I go, a lot of that was just me. My insecurities. Their performance reflected on me. You need to behave a certain way or it makes me look like a bad dad. Did I want to trust God with my identity? No, my identity is wrapped up in my kids' behavior. That's messed up. It's messed up. I create a lot of heartache for my kids. I create a lot of heartache for myself. And all along, God was trying to ask me to do the very same thing he'd been asking me to do when I was a teenager. Will you just trust me? Just trust me. And the way you prove that you trust me is you go my way. You take the road I'm on. Trust me. It's going to be okay. But that's scary, God. I know it's scary, but just trust me. God, that's bigger than me. I know it's bigger than you. That's why I'm asking you to do it. Because I want you to come to a place where you quit relying on your abilities, quit relying on your strengths and your charisma, and rely on me. And the biggest question God asked me was, do you trust me with your kids? And when I could finally surrender that, the peace that came into my heart and the peace that came into my relationship with my kids, I had to trust him with my kids. And then the kids leave. And that's the situation where I'm at right now. I'm just turned 56 recently. I'm not that far away from retiring age. I don't know if I'll ever be able to retire. Some of you are there right now. You're like, will I be able to afford it? How much money do you need to retire? Where does that money come from? Who gets that money? Where's the tree that that money grows on that you get to retire on? How's this going to work? How much money? I got $50. Honey, you want to go out for dinner? No, we can't. Ramen noodles, maybe, if we split a pack? That's where my mind is at these days. How does this look? Pretty soon I'm going to be so old. A, people don't want to listen to me anymore. And B, I'm not going to be, I never made sense. I'm really going to not make sense when I get older. I'm going to be forced into retirement at some point. Where am I going to live? And God's like, you trust me? Just trust me. See, if I put $3 million in your bank account, you would trust that. I don't want you to trust that. I want you to trust me. Okay, now listen, here's how this works. Because this pattern, see what I'm saying? The situations change from one decade or one moment to another moment, but the issue does not ever change. It's the same issue. Do you trust him or not? Do you trust him or not? When I was about 12 to 14, I can't remember exactly when it was, but in that age range, my dad's dad had a stroke and a heart attack. And at that age, a very impressionable age, I remember going into the hospital where my grandpa was, and my grandpa didn't recognize my dad. And it kind of created an anxiety in me. Because I had known my grandfather, right? Until that moment, I'd never seen him like that. Shortly after that stroke and heart attack, he died. Well, about 12 years ago or so, I get a phone call. My dad had a massive stroke, collapsed at Pizza Ranch in my hometown after church on a Sunday eating lunch. Blacked out, collapsed, fell off the chair, laid on the ground. My mom thought he was dead. And they gave him the shot. There was someone there, who, a nurse or whatever, and they give him a shot for stroke victims. And by the time I got a shower and we got a few things packed and we drove down to Iowa and Ames to the hospital where my dad was, he couldn't talk. And the first thing that he wanted me to do was to shave him because he hadn't shaved in a couple of days. I've never shaved my dad before. And ever since then, this weird anxiety would creep up within me for years. I wonder, my grandpa, this happened to my grandpa, it happened to my dad, probably going to happen to me. I wonder when. You know, the test is exactly the same. It just seems like the stakes get a little bit higher, but it's exactly the same. Are you going to trust God or not? You trust him or not? Came across something that was really helpful to me recently. It was a statistic, and it was a figure, and the number was 86,400. 86,400. Now, if someone were to stand in front of you and take a stack of $1 bills and one at a time, they just started counting, handing you these things, one at a time, 86,400. I don't know how long that would take, but it would take quite a while, don't you think? And then by the time they got done, how big would the stack of $1 bills be? You'd have a lot of $1 bills in your hand, and a lot of you would walk away really happy. Many of you would run to Deadwood in that moment. A lot of you would be really happy. 86,400. That's a big number. At a resting heart rate, the average heart rate is 60 beats a minute. 60 per minute. If there's 60 minutes in an hour, you take 60 beats times 60 minutes times 24 hours in a day, and your heart beats at rest 86,400 times every single day. Every day. How many of those 86,400 beats occurred because you made it happen, or you made sure it happened, or you were aware that you were helping make it happen? Even if it were one, I'd go, dude, way to go, right? But you know the answer to the question is not one. You didn't make one of those heartbeats happen on any of the days that God has given you so far. Now, if God can so design a heart in a muscle that never takes a break. A lot of you know, I've been working out for the last little over a year doing CrossFit, and we're in the middle of the Open right now, and it's an open competition, and I did it last Friday and fatigued bad. It was a 20-minute time cap, I think it was, and I didn't make it. I quit at 20 minutes, and I was sucking wind. 20 minutes, because these muscles can't keep up. But my heart muscle never gets a break. That muscle never says, time out. I'm done. Can I just take the afternoon off? No, your heart never quits, right? Now, if God makes sure that your heart beats 86,400 times at rest, 86,400, it's amazing to me. How much more can you trust him with anything in your life? Tell me what in your life that you feel like you need to grasp for control is really within your control. None of it is. Because if God just said, no, I think it's your day's done, you're 86,400 over, you're done. Nothing else you're trying to control in your life is going to matter. It really does come down to this. Are you going to trust him with your life or not? He'll bring you to a crisis of belief, and that crisis always requires faith, and not just any kind of faith, but faith that's backed up by your actions. Because listen, what you do shows what you actually believe. What you do shows exactly what you believe. I want to end with this, because faith is how we do life. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, Paul says, we live by believing and not by seeing. Because seeing is the opposite of faith. Seeing is the opposite. And if you can see it, if you can figure it out, if you know every single step of how it needs to go, and you've got it all within your little box that you've figured out, it's not faith. It's sight. And what God, the relationship that God is inviting us into is a relationship of faith where we keep trusting him. We keep trusting him. We keep trusting him. Paul says this in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. My old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. We've been talking all along about all of this whole thing we're talking about is all a relationship. The relationship is the heartbeat of everything God wants from you. He's not looking for you to perform in a religious way. He's not even necessarily looking for your obedience so that you can meet a standard, so that once you've met the standard, now he's going to accept you. No, he loves you. He's pursuing a relationship with you. He wants you to love him back. And when you love him, you'll do what he's asking him to do. And what he's asking you to do is trust him. Trust him. He proved he's trustworthy, and he's proven that the relationship he offers you really is a love relationship when he laid down his life. And that's what we're going to do this morning, is celebrate that. He's proven he's trustworthy. He's proven that sometimes the hard path is the good path. He's proven, because he's the one who said he couldn't do anything except for the Father doing it through him. He trusted the Father to go to the cross. He didn't want to. Father, not my will, but your will be done, he said. He trusted God, and he gave his life because he loves you.